May the gods forgive me.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome back to the show. Cersei 1. Did you know that Cersei 1 is the 54th chapter in A Dance with Dragons?
You know, I looked that up and found that out.
What about that?
When I was doing my research.
What about that?
It's also the first, well, that's the stupidest thing I could ever say. The first Cersei chapter in A Dance with Dragons.
Okay.
Duh.
Are you a table of contents kind of person?
What do you mean?
When you get a new book, do you go through the table of contents and look at it?
No, because I feel like that's spoilers. So everybody listening has done this, even if you say that you've never done it. Flip forward to look at characters to make sure they have POV chapters later down the road.
That's a interesting
function. When Tyrion, you know, when like Tyrion almost dies with like the like the stone men, who among us didn't like flip to make sure he had another POV? Mm-hmm. You know, I think table of contents is kind of spoilery almost. Like, I'd rather just go on through.
Okay,
do you read it first before you get into the book?
I feel like it depends on how the table of contents are laid out.
Right.
Not all the books that I read have table of contents.
Mm-hmm. Well, in A Song of Ice and Fire, table of contents is not helpful at all.
That's what I was going to ask about.
Because it's just chapter numbers.
Yeah, POV numbers.
Yeah, it's just like, but the only thing that's helpful is to see who's there, really, mm-hmm. I would say.
It does reveal who's alive and who's dead in some way. So there's a little bit of, I guess, if you thought maybe Cersei was going to die in A Dance of Dragons, you would see that she has one chapter.
Right.
54 chapters down the line, you know that she was still alive, but I don't know, it seems unlikely that. It just doesn't feel like major characters are going to go. You know, one time when I was just starting the podcast, one of my friends that I met in a chat room when I was a little kid, we were talking about A Song of Ice and Fire, and he told me that there was a chapter where I was confused at the time, or maybe I'm confused about it now, but this is how it is in my memory.
Mm-hmm.
And if this isn't a thing, well, I know it's not a thing, but this should be a thing.
Okay.
Basically, this is how he set it up. He was trying to tell me how cool George R. R. Martin was.
Okay.
Like, ahead of time.
Your pre-A Song of Ice and Fire days.
This is before I started the podcast.
Okay.
And he was telling me how cool of an author he was and how much I would like the books. And he was telling me that there was a pirate character that was introduced later that had just one chapter. And he was introduced and he died at the end of it. Now that doesn't happen.
Right.
But oh my God, could you imagine if that did happen?
I mean, that would be pretty wild.
That'd
Why did
cool.
he tell you that?
Maybe he was confused. I need to ask him. I've never followed up about that. Or maybe I'm confused about the conversation. Either way, I thought it was a tidbit. That'd be such a cool thing to do.
Yeah, it would
in
be
a song
cool
of Ice
thing
and
to
Fire.
Do.
You know what I mean? I feel like, oh no, you know what? We do, maybe he was talking about Varamyr.
Oh.
That makes sense.
That's such an interesting, like, when you're telling somebody about A Song of Ice and Fire, to me, that's like an interesting tidbit that you would necessarily pass on.
He knew about me in some way. He was like, you're going to like this.
I guess that's true. So.
So you don't look forward, but if you're reading A Dance of Dragons for the first time and you're someone who doesn't look forward in the table of contents also, you're 53 chapters into reading the book and you turn the page. Cersei won.
We finally get a Cersei chapter. It's been a minute.
The last time we were with her, it was really creepy.
Mm-hmm.
She was in that drab room and we didn't know that it was going to go like this. Like, we didn't know that everything was going to start crashing down around her and that she'd eventually get pulled into this hole.
Right.
But she's there now.
Right. And I feel like this chapter, we're really getting set up for the next chapter, which mm-hmm. is like one of the greatest chapters in A Song of Ice and Fire. The next Cersei chapter, because we finally get to her Walk of Atonement.
We were talking about maybe having Lena Headey on for that episode.
Yeah, we were just going to like text her and just see if that was available.
She might join the podcast for that.
But, and so I feel like when we're reading this chapter in the context of, I keep saying stupid stuff. We're reading this chapter in the context of what happened before and what's to come next. How interesting is that? As you're kind of talking about, as things are kind of crashing around her and as I think about what's about to happen to her, Cersei is such an interesting character to read because she is the most unreliable narrator, I feel like, of anybody in A Song of Ice and Fire. And so often what she perceives as happening, and we see that a couple of times in this chapter, is absolutely not what's happening at all. So I think that she, with her whole desire to finally confess and all of this, is leading up to her just being able to get the heck out of here. Let me just like atone in however way they want me to, and mm-hmm. we'll just move on with our lives and I'll just go home, you know, doesn't kind of backfires on her. But reading this chapter with our broader knowledge of what's actually happening in the story, and then also understanding that Cersei is just very deeply usually in her head and not really in tune with reality, I feel like we're almost getting two different stories here at the same time. Just because there's just such a wild difference between what's actually happening versus her perception.
Do in my you mind. Think that she believes her own BS? If there's any part of it that she believes?
1,000%.
Really?
1,000%. And there's, you know, she's talking about how she's the true heir, or she's the heir of Tywin Lannister, and of the, she's Cersei Lannister of the Rock, and she is thinking about Jaime, who's absolutely coming on his way, and everything's going to be just fine. Nobody knows about anything. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just kind of BS my way through this confession and just give a little bit, but not everything. Obviously not everything.
You got to be careful in this situation. You're the ex-queen regent. Your son is the king. You're in a state where, if you guys remember the buildup of Feast for Crows, the Sparrows have been gathering all of this power, not only influence, not only people that are underrepresented in droves, but also this physical power that's scary and that will hurt because they'll stab you and they'll kill you.
Right.
You know,
what and they have no like true alliance to anything, just to like literally their god.
There's just a lot of people there.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. Well, there's just a lot of, there's chaos. I mean, and Cersei's not really getting a lot of information. She's getting snippets from the different septas who are kind of talking around her near the end of the chapter. Because so in the beginning, I mean, she's really literally in the dark in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
And
just losing herself over time.
She's not sleeping. They're not allowing her to sleep. She's not eating. She's just become delirious as she... And it's interesting because she's not often, or she mentions at some point how uncomfortable she is, not just because of the literal torture that she's going through, but because she's not often in a situation where she's doesn't feel like she has control over everything.
Yeah.
And so what she does have control over is
whether or not she wants to confess.
Yeah. And praying and kind of playing into their game. So she's like, Praise for like multiple days.
Half believing, half not believing. You were talking about her being an unreliable narrator. And so I'm inside of her head. Okay. I don't know what she really believes. I'm still confused by that. Because you remember at the end of the chapter when she's talking about Tyrion being in Dorne? She's talking to Kevin. It's like, what is this?
Yeah.
You have been going through torture. They have been torturing you.
Absolutely.
I think the first proper paragraph, but technically the second paragraph, you know, those like those paragraphs that are a sentence long and they're still a paragraph.
Yeah.
Those are weird.
Yeah.
Those are not paragraphs, but they are. So it's the first paragraph, second paragraph in the chapter. George R. R. Martin pulls out this. It's if you look at it and you read it from top to bottom, every word that he chose is so perfectly chosen to be just a, diminishing hope. Yeah, it's a secret message. There's a code in it. Okay. There's a code in it. I'm talking to you, Dan. there's a, people really do think there's a secret message. Anyway, we can talk about it another. Oh yeah, for real. Oh yeah. Every page. Anyway, I need more information. Apparently, you know what? Let's talk about it right now. Apparently there's a secret. Apparently there's a secret message.
Okay.
Or no, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
It's not a secret message, but it's basically a secret message.
What's the message about?
It's the sort of like the DNA.
Release date
like
for
the,
Winds of Winter?
Yes. No, it's the code. It's like the code to everything.
Okay.
I'm hopeful for stuff like that, though. And if it wasn't done on purpose, maybe it's just nature just popped it into existence.
Maybe.
Anyway, this paragraph, George writes, it's diminishing hope. He's talking about the window that's too small for her to fit out of, but big enough to let an increasingly crappy draft come in that adds to the torture of the situation. The coarseness of her clothes, the way that she's treated. And it ultimately leads up to her being in a... This is Cersei's personal hell.
Mm-hmm.
These women that have aspects of women that she resists becoming.
Yeah.
And aspects of freedom that she doesn't I mean, she buys into the power system because she's in it. And these people buy into their own power system, mm-hmm. but it's a different one.
Yes.
It's based on faith. And it's like, it's not based on strength or political savvy, but also it is.
Right.
So it's just like they get, there's like another layer of pretending. It's a bigger layer of pretending than she even gets to have. Mm-hmm. She's actually Cersei from The Rock. She was actually the queen, yada, yada, yada. But at the same time, you know, it is kind of all fake too. But
yeah.
they get to be really in the act. And she doesn't get to be at all. She has to pretend like their act is actually superior in this case. And that they actually have some kind of footing in order to be allowed any kind of separation from the torture that they're giving her. Mm-hmm. This is hell for torture for Cersei right here. Like this torture is hell, is a living hell for her.
And nothing she does or says grants her any sort of upper hand.
Right.
I really liked when I'm trying to see if I can see it, but when she gets that little shift that's really uncomfortable, and so she rips it all up.
Oh, yeah.
Thinking that they're going to give her her clothes back, you know, if she throws a fit, and then they leave her freezing cold and suffering for an unspecified amount of time. And then she's basically begging thank you as they give her another identical shift as the one before. And I just thought that kind of so well summarized mm-hmm. all of the things that she tries to do. So this is a paragraph I was looking for. I'm going to read it. She had threatened, but her threats had been received with stony faces and deaf ears. She had commanded, but her commands had been ignored. She had invoked the mother's mercy, appealing to the natural sympathy of one woman to another. But the three shriveled septas must have put their womanhood aside when they spoke their vows. She had tried charm, speaking with them gently, accepting each new outrage meekly. They were not swayed. She had offered them rewards, promised them leniency, honors, gold, positions at court. They treated her promises as they did her threats. And she had prayed. Oh, how she had prayed. Prayer was what they wanted, so she served it to them. And then she kind of goes on talking about all the different things that she's praying. All the prayers that she had remembered as a kid, you know, it's like all coming back. This is like the only way that she can think of to kind of get anybody's attention is to actually, like you're saying, buy into kind of this system that she can't access.
Right.
And so, you know, she's in a very uncomfortable scenario. And she says she hates feeling weak. And this is her completely, there's no news. She doesn't know what's going on. And she's powerless.
I've been betrayed by all these people. Mm-hmm. Except Qyburn, he's my only guy.
Her BFF Qyburn.
Why do you think,
the last person to see her.
Why do you think he's still allowed to do Qyburn stuff?
I don't know.
If she's so bad.
I'm like biasly against, like, I just think Qyburn, we just have had a long history with him on this podcast, I feel like. And so it's like, I can't take him seriously, but I probably should because of
what he's up to.
What he's up to and how much of all the people left on Earth, this is the last guy that Cersei's really got
mm-hmm.
at all.
Yeah, he does his job. We know that. But, you know, in the meantime, maybe other people aren't taking him seriously either. I don't know what it is. But they need a maester, so there he is. Man, that Osni Kettleblack torture scene from the last chapter, mm-hmm. so dark. And that's really what all this hinges on with the High Sparrow. What do you think the Sparrows actually want? Maybe mm-hmm. less specifically the High Sparrow. What do you think that in general their plan is?
I think that's a good question because I think that's a good question. I was kind of thinking the same thing as I was reading this chapter and as we've like just been reading about their rise to power throughout the series so far. I think that as you were saying a little bit earlier, what makes them interesting is that they really are a pretty autonomous group. Mm-hmm. I mean, their alignment and allegiance is to God. It's to like a higher power.
Sure.
It's not necessarily to something specific. To me, the only like real thing that I feel like they've come out against on a side is Stannis and his Red God. They don't want that happening or coming because that's, you know, against what they're trying to preach from a religious perspective. But I think that that's what makes them as an entity and the High Sparrow and their whole group such a major threat is because they can't be swayed by all the stuff that Cersei's trying to sway. Mm-hmm. Titles, political power, any of that kind of stuff. That means nothing to these kinds of people. And that's the currency that's used to play. And so I truly Well, I mean, it's hard to say, but I really do just think, because so to take your question and like wrap it up into another question that I had, like later on down the road when Cersei's confessing to the High Sparrow, there's certain things that he's like really prodding into and certain that I thought were interesting.
Very revealing.
And things that he wasn't prodding into that I thought was interesting. Like he didn't really care about the whole incest thing. That was like an afterthought.
Well, the thing is, if he's the guy that we thought he was at first, then he would have different questions for her in this moment. Mm-hmm. But it turns out after he's got her and he treats her like this, we know he's not the good guy that he set himself up to
right.
be. And we know from this conversation that he's also the political guy that we think he might have actually been the whole time.
Right. So, but
why though?
That's exactly.
That's so confusing.
Yeah. So that ties in, like that moment also ties into that broader question of just like, what is it that he's necessarily trying to gain? And maybe it truly is for his own.
That's what it seems to me.
It's for his own.
He's like a manse, kind of like a linchpin holding these people together.
Yeah. And it's between him and his higher power. And, you know, the boxes that he's trying to check here are literally just like, he's not trying to necessarily sell Cersei down the river to the Tyrells or something,
right.
You know?
He's kind of using Cersei. He's using Cersei in a big way.
For sure. But I think he's using it for his own.
Sure.
His own thing.
Back in the original days of Westeros, Aegon I dealt with the faith, and it was a different world because people really bought into it.
Yeah.
It was the seat was located in Old Town, mm-hmm. and it was like a trip to have to deal with the politics because
right.
he's like, I'm trying to settle here. And they were like, well, we acknowledge your excellency. You know, like, it turns out that God says that mm-hmm. you're not so bad after all. The thing, da, da, da. And he's like, very well. I believe in y'all as well. And they're like,
See you later. We
believe in you. And then, but, you know, then all the fanfare dies down. And then, like, they send representatives to be like, all right, let's discuss what we really believe in.
Yeah.
Who gets what from this? And what do I demand from you? And what
That's
do you
fun.
Demand from me? So, those people had more of a sway against the storm of the Targaryens because there was people on the ground, kind of like now with the Sparrows, but different, that believed in them and would stand up for them. They would start to lose support. There's no way you can burn everyone at the same time with the amount of dragons that they had. So they had to work with people. And that's kind of happening here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like we learned from Kevin that there were no troops. It's just that right now they outnumber us and that a fight inside of the capital with cell swords appearing in the south, confusion with Stannis,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
all this stuff that's happening
mm-hmm.
within and without. It's just not a very good time to launch a fight within the city against people that some of our small folk, a lot of them probably, because they have nothing better to do maybe or no one else to depend on, will support.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to get really messy. And we don't want to deal with this right now.
Well, they
now.
Don't have the resources to deal with. I mean, they can't. They
not right this second, but
yeah.
they do overall. So it's kind of like if the High Sparrow really wants to make something happen, or if he really hates Cersei or something like that, for example, he could just have her killed. But that's not going to do anything.
Right.
He really wants something. So it's, I don't think he's mad enough or they are mad enough to necessarily, maybe Septa and Nella, I don't know, to just like hurt and get people out of their way while they have the chance. I think that they know that their days are numbered in some way. I don't know how they could possibly. I wonder what they know about the geopolitical situation with Fagin's people and, you know, whatever happens with Loras and however the Tyrells respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do they. I suppose they have something going on with Margaery and subsequently Loras. But again, if there's troops to stop them from hurting their family, then why would any of those people continue to make a deal with the faith? Because I think this Westeros is different than an old Westeros. I just think it's too, there's too much going on right now to put as much stock in the Sparrows and the faith. I don't think there's enough soldiers overall across the whole kingdom, but I might be wrong about that. I'm just wondering what they want.
Right.
What's their plan? Because how do you think that Fagin, for example, he rolls into King's Landing. Let's just forget everything else is happening. Let's say he wins. What do we do with the High Sparrow? And he's like, I've thought all these things about mm-hmm. all these people. And let's say some people have been executed. Cersei's walked. what's the plan
like,
with
what's
them?
The plan with them?
What, it's just, it doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. And I don't know if that's a failing of the writing to like not make it seem like there's an outcome that makes sense. But to me, it just, I don't feel the natural flow of possibility from this.
So do
it
you
seems like he's backing himself into a wall almost, or to a corner.
So you feel like they've got to be working with someone or something, or if they're not working with someone or something at this point in time, whoever comes into King's Landing is going to have to contend with them as a force.
Or not. Because before, the Faith had, they were like the power. They mm-hmm. were basically what held everything together.
Yeah.
But it's really not the same case anymore.
I mean,
that's not really how it is. I mean, there's a reason why the Faith was in the position in the last High Septon, or in the position that it is in the last High Septon, was the way that he was, and that it was so possible for this rising up to happen within the city. It's just different than it was before. It's less political. And right now, political is not very solid for anyone, you know, the state of politics for the leadership. And so maybe that makes sense. Maybe yeah. that's why they're not connected. So like you were saying, they are autonomous. They're not leaning on who was born, where you're from. There's no trial that they could be put on to say, God is not real. Therefore, your choice about who is needs to be put on trial is false. But the situation with Cersei and Tommen's rule, for example, which multiple parties are interested in, mm-hmm. specifically the Tyrells
right.
and the Lannisters,
right.
that is dependent on however this, I'm not sure how the everyone's trial is going to go, but there's going to be trial by battle in some case with Robert Strong.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Get hype. You know, where does that all go? It's all smashing together. They could just all go against the High Sparrow and then it would be over. But it's weird because the Tyrells also want whatever's happening to Cersei. To
right,
happen.
Exactly. And I just feel like going against the High Sparrow doesn't do anything for any, like the only people who really, I mean, we don't 100% know exactly like what necessarily happened. I mean, so Margaery got off.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But like,
maybe for now.
Right. So the Tyrells are going to be fine with whatever's happening with the High Sparrow. I just.
Maybe though. Maybe not. Because if Cersei's found guilty, then Tommen loses his legitimacy because mm-hmm. she's being put on trial for regicide, deicide. What else? Incest.
Pesticide.
Pesticide, incest, and treason.
Yeah.
If she's found guilty of incest or if she's found guilty of all that stuff at once, because that's what it'll be, then Tommen's no longer king and Margaery's no longer queen.
Right.
And what have we been investing all this money for right. in the first place? So Olenna and Mace have got a lot of decisions to make, and it sounds like they're sort of holding back and waiting for stuff to coalesce.
Well, it's like, what did they say about Margaery? Like, their number one priority is to kind of get her out of whatever situation she's in and, like, in somewhere safe. I just feel like whatever they've got going on here at this point, the Tyrells just in general, I feel like this is their moment. Like, while Cersei is stuck here, while they've got Tommen in their back pocket, yeah. while Jaime's nowhere to be found, like, this is the time for them to be making moves, and we're obviously not really seeing very many of what those moves are to be made, other than little snippets about, you know, what's going on with Loras. We don't really know. Margaery is being protected in some way, you know, after everything that's been going, you know, this is their time to.
I think we got two different stories about that. Some apparently, like, Kevin says that she's in Randall Tarly's custody, and then one of the Septas, I think it was Moel, I can't remember her name, says that, like, lets it slip that she's with the king.
Yeah,
at all
right,
times.
Right.
So it's a little confusing.
So it's like, who knows? Like,
all the Tyrell stuff
she
is confusing.
Is,
so what's going on with Loras? What's the deal there?
I don't know. So I think it's interesting because they mention him. So I mean, this is just like, to me, a classic George R. R. Martin kind of moment when which Septa was talking about. Was talking about Margaery, all this kind of stuff, and then she goes, but her brother, and then gets shut up.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like, stop talking. You're saying too much.
Anella's like the main guy.
Yeah.
She's like vice president.
Yeah. It's like, you're giving away too much information. And to me, that's just like a red flag of, well, we're like supposed to be thinking about Loras, yeah, and then we get snapped. So last we hear about him is he's at Dragonstone fighting. And so
taking on grievous wounds.
Yeah. That he's dying basically.
Right. Or and not.
But we're not sure. And so I feel like as we're thinking about what's going on with the Tyrells period, you know, there's question if like Loras actually was successful in the takeover of Dragonstone, or if he's on his way elsewhere to like broaden the Tyrell, the grand Tyrell plan.
so he might be off, like he's healed enough and he might be furthering their interests.
Right.
That doesn't seem likely.
Right. So that's kind of like an idea.
Did he take ships?
Theory.
Did he go on foot?
Like ships. He's like, he's fine, or he's fine enough now, and he's able to kind of like continue to push their agenda forward, whatever their specific agenda might be.
Okay.
But I think the basic overall idea just about all these different whisperings that we're getting about what the Tyrells are up to is that, to me, they're really seizing these opportunities, mm-hmm, to like try to get their stuff together,
right,
and to hopefully get themselves in a position where they can continue to have a high seat in power, or, you know, protect themselves, because
they're in a weird position.
Yeah.
They're in a weird position because there's such a rush and grab for power, mm-hmm, because a lot of the stability of Westeros has been shaken since the stuff went down with Robert and subsequent War of Five Kings. And Cersei's use, the Lannister use of them, partnership, subsequent rise in status, and also location of their troops being allowed in strategic places, which is probably the big one when it comes down to it. They've got money and infantry. Even with all that being said, there's so much more happening, and they still aren't fully in control.
Right.
Even though the people that Cersei put in charge that haven't spoken up for her, that she doesn't trust, people like Ord Meriwether, people like Harris Swift, they are basically Tyrell men now, mm-hmm, is the thing. And so they'll go where the power is, just like they went with Cersei. And we've known that since the beginning. Olenna and Mace probably know that too. And so I think whatever's going on with Loras, whatever ends up happening there, that'll make them feel more or less incensed, mm-hmm, more or less pissed off. Like, mm-hmm, we're going to personally do something about this because this great talent, this wonderful person has been taken from us or almost permanently hurt in a way that we can't sit idly by and let it happen. If things are really overwhelming, then I don't think that they'll be able to get personal revenge because they're going to be too busy trying to avoid getting hurt themselves. But if they're able to side with someone else, which it seems like kind of a Tyrell thing to do, they might be able to get their revenge and get a whole lot more at, mm-hmm, the same time, which could be really interesting for them.
Yeah. What do you think about how we see their storyline playing out in context of the show? I mean, really, the Tyrells get wiped out in like one fell swoop in the TV series. And to me, obviously, it seems like it's going to be a little bit more complex than that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot more complex.
Just because
of Fagon and what's happening right now with
Loras. So it may not go
Loras.
That way at all.
Yeah, I don't think so, honestly. I don't think so. Maybe the version that was adapted in the show is like a symbolic version of what happens. But I don't know if it'll be from Dany's hand necessarily, but if it is, that would be kind of satisfying, mm-hmm, because Dany's cool. And if one of her first things in Westeros is taking out the Tyrells in a big way, would be pretty nuts.
That would be, argument to just like burn King's Landing to the ground, you know, becomes more and more attractive, I feel like, the more complicated things get.
Yeah, no kidding. Probably for George, too, honestly. I was thinking, like, what is he going to do with all of this, you know?
Yeah.
How does Cersei... Okay, so, like I said, she's in the middle of hell right now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's mad about it.
Of course.
And all of her atonement, obviously, is to stop being tortured. We can totally. I mean, that's what humanity does. That's part of survival. She's just surviving at that
point. And she, like, she says she's going to confess, and she finally gets to eat. She gets a full night's of sleep.
Oh, yeah.
And she gets into a new room with that bigger window than the one that you were talking about at the beginning, which I was
the food description of the food that she was fed after she confessed to the High Sparrow was some of the most simple, but also very thoughtfully prepared dishes in the series.
And she's been
crushed walnuts scattered over this like little salad that she had.
I know. I was like, that sounds like something
she
I
got,
would want.
She got Postmates from Sweetgreen
for part of her meal.
That was pretty cool.
But she says, you know, something about how she's falls asleep with the full stomach for the first time. She starts to feel like herself again. She's falling asleep with the full stomach.
She
for the
is
first
human,
time.
She discovers. Yeah. After days of separation from time and space, she's like, wait a second, I have certain needs.
That's so relatable in quarantine.
Did you like the style that George, I don't know if you remember, but at the beginning of the chapter, because we're 54 chapters in, I think, he sort of brings back a beginning of a book in a series. I don't know what it's called. I bet it has a fancy name. Style in which he sort of reiterates what has happened through the perspective of the character rethinking about everything. And it seemed like a little out of place because it doesn't seem like his usual style because we're not in one huge story. He tends to make these point of view chapters hyper local to whatever the person's dealing with and the sort of context of the imagery around the setting and how that is relative to what the person's thinking about sort of establishes the mood. And then we might get like a couple different references to the past. But in this chapter, that was a pretty good beginning of a book vibe, resetting of the information in King's Landing. And I was wondering if you liked that or not, or if it felt random to you.
I mean, I think that's probably done for a couple different reasons. I mean, the first goes back to what we were kind of saying about her being such an unreliable narrator. That it adds like this interesting level because we're getting kind of the retelling of her
in
experience.
Like fake and real ways at the same time.
Yeah, so I mean, that could be a particular reason. But I mean, I think that it's helpful. I mean, she's been through quite a bit off page since we've last seen her. And so I think that for us to really understand why she confesses and understand like the context of what leads her to actually make that decision, I feel like we need to really see the types of torture that she's been living through over X amount of time. Because otherwise, you know, if we're going to get dropped into it, like sometimes we are, I feel like her motivation to do that is, to me, her motivation is so extremely clear in this chapter why she's doing that. But without all of that experience, it's kind of like, who knows what the reasoning behind that might be. And so I didn't notice it, but now that you're mentioning it.
I'm curious how much of that is his responsibility, or if maybe like an editor said there should be some sort of a framework like this around the beginning of it. But I like the idea of it being sort of adopted and used in a non-normal way, but to present her inner narrative in a way that feels comfortable and like it's trustworthy and real, like it's coming from George, but it's actually not. It's coming from Cersei, and we don't really know what to think. I loved that around the three quarters of the way through the chapter, just the bandying about of her words with the High Sparrow, and then when she was walking back and then inside of the cell, talking to the Septas and just reliving the info, but having her italics being like just hateful.
Yes. The whole thing about her and Jamie on their wedding.
That's
going
to be my own, probably. Insane. Where is I'm going to read it right now. We can read it later too.
It's worth the dual read.
Here we go. Oh my God. It's so bad. These ladies are the worst. I feel bad. I know Cersei is the worst. I know Cersei sucks, but this is...
You feel bad for her?
Yeah, this is a cold chapter. You see, I don't appreciate or like what they're doing because they have nothing. At least Cersei's got some weird legacy from Tywin and she was born into it. I mean, they are weird. The Lannisters are weird.
But she's done a lot of horrible stuff and with no consequence.
Sure. Yeah, no, you're totally right. But these people suck.
Yeah, they're... What does she say in the beginning about how the three of them have become her world, basically?
Yeah. And it's like, yeah. This is her world is this large, yeah. And she has Qyburn as well.
Yeah.
Man, they're just aspects of her and of reality that for some reason the gods wanted her to have to be completely exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's learning things about the world that she's getting reminded things about the world that she hates.
Yeah.
And that she's willing to destroy if it destroys her in the process. Maybe. Maybe not her kids. Maybe her kids too. Hell, I don't know.
I mean,
she's pissed.
She already is. I mean, you look at like the way she reacts to the Marcella news.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that was kind of like, strange.
Kind of weird.
Yeah. I was expecting it to be a little bit more sad than that.
Yeah.
Here's the quote about Jaime when they were walking back. And here's a Septa, you know, being so helpful to her. Just, you know, they're so happy that she atoned.
You must feel so clean.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you can. Go
no,
for
I wasn't
it.
Even reading it. That, I just was remembering.
That's it. Okay, that's it. No. You must feel so much lighter now, clean and innocent as a maid on the morning of her wedding. Honestly, guys, this is what she thought right after that. I fucked Jaime on the morning of my wedding. The queen recalled. I do, she said. I feel reborn, as if a festering boil had been lanced. And now at last I can begin to heal. I can almost fly. I don't get it. Are most of our characters like, you get it?
No.
Who else in our POVs is like this?
Daenerys did the same thing on her wedding day.
What does she do?
With Dario. Doesn't she do the same thing when she's marrying
his Dario? Oh,
yeah,
but his, come on.
I'm just saying.
Not even his Dario would be mad about that,
I
don't think.
We liked Daenerys, and so we're like, oh, and I love Dario.
I'm not mad at Cersei for fucking Jaime the day she married Robert, honestly.
No, of course not.
Think about how many women Robert has fucked in and out of his marriage.
1,000%. It's just funny. But yeah, like, I think that whole conversation is just hilarious because from my own, like, personal life experience perspective of, like,
being an adult.
Being an adult and, like, being, like, deeply religious, too. It's like, right. You can, like, see all of these different, like.
So do people talk passive-aggressively like that, then?
Yes!
And they, like, use faith. And, oh, my God.
All day, every day. And so it's just, I feel like it's just, like, to me, like, as this extra, just, like, I feel reborn. It's like,
Honestly, get me out of here for that. Or I could watch. See, that's the thing. That's a test of patience.
Mm-hmm.
And Cersei's not. She doesn't want to play that. This whole chapter is a long extension of patience. The High Sparrow, like, he's an old guy. He's had a very colorful life. And this connects back to what we were talking about. And I was like, what does he want? I think if anything, he's just enjoying like this system working for him. He knows that if he's slow and he sits in this stupid room with
shoes.
Ugly carven faces, mm-hmm. It's the simplest, meekest, most humble room with no shoes and I don't wash my feet. If I do all of these things and you come in this room and he's so rude about asking her questions,
yeah.
You know, she's like says all this stuff and he's like, yep.
Yeah, but she's also BSing him and he knows it.
Well, like, you're playing the game too, buddy.
I know, but it's like he's got the power right now and she's in his hands.
Yeah.
And she thinks that she can.
And he's a dick about it.
All I've done is just my cousin and, you know, like,
right.
This is the only
that's
terrible
pretty
thing.
Good. That's a pretty good confession, if I'm being honest.
I mean, it's a good confession, but
think
it's such
about
a
it. You're Cersei. If you say whatever you're about to say, it's going to be written forever.
Right. And I'm not saying she should or would confess any of the real things, but to me, like, this whole exchange between the two of them, it's like nothing. What happens? Like, Cersei doesn't say anything,
right.
And that whole plea about how she was lonely and she needed
that makes sense. You don't think people use those arguments now?
They
completely do.
But it was just funny because it was just like, I needed the power. You know, I needed to
sure.
be protected
yeah.
as a widow.
She's like a woman's weak.
I needed to protect
I'm
my
a weak
children.
Woman. She's like appealing to this guy's misogyny. And he's like, you know,
right.
Women are pieces of shit after all.
Right. The whole
what does he say? I forget, but the faith's official stance is that women are a blight upon men that just serve to tempt them. I agree with the second part of that, but not the first part.
It's just like, But to have all of this conversation happening while she's also like thinking earlier in the chapter about how she's like stuck in a woman's body and how she hates it. And now she's like, and how she was trying to appeal like woman to woman to the mother. Like all
she's
this
like,
stuff.
She's like the worst person to like come out and say that something really bad happened to her.
Right.
Because she completely understands all of it and just believes whatever the current most powerful thing that she can say for her game's purposes, even in her inner monologue, even in her personal thoughts. Mm-hmm. It goes that deep. So I guess I just got the answer to my question. Does Cersei believe her own BS? The answer is she believes whatever she needs to believe in the moment to just move past that moment.
Yeah. Right.
Interesting. That's why she's so effective.
At least, except for here, you know, so
I don't know, man. She got the food after all.
She did, but now she's going to trial.
They were always going to give her the food though, because they tortured Osni proper. You know what I mean? Like they did as much as they would to her. It's not like it would have gotten worse, I don't think.
I mean, I don't know. It was pretty like ruthless.
It was.
And it was pretty sustained. And there was no, I guess because we don't get any communication, she's like cut off from even like the Septas aren't really talking to her until she decides to confess. I mean, to me, like, she made the only choice that she had. There's no way that, like, she had to eventually confess something.
She could have acted like something was wrong with her, and they could have, like, come to check on her. She could have poked their eyes. That would have been fun. Like, they get really close, and she's like, gets Septa and Nell's eyeball out.
She could have, but then what happens after that?
Yeah. I don't know, but, you know, at least that happened to Septa and Nella at the end of all of it. I'm going to read this paragraph that Cersei believes about everyone around her. She hated and despised all of them, almost as much as she hated and despised the men who had betrayed her, false friends, treacherous servants, men who had professed undying love, even her own blood. All of them had deserted her in her hour of need. Osni Kettleblack, that weakling, had broken beneath the lash, filling the High Sparrow's ears with secrets he should have taken to his grave. His brothers, scum of the streets, who she raised high to no more than sit upon their hands. Arryn Waters, her admiral, had fled to the sea with a Drummond she had built for him. Orton Merryweather had gone running back to Longtable, taking his wife Tyena, who had been the queen's one true friend in these terrible times. Really. Harris Swift and Grandmaster Pycelle had abandoned her to captivity and offered the realm to the very men who conspired against her. Meryn Trant and Boros Blunt, the king's sworn protector, were nowhere to be found. Even her cousin Lancel, who once had claimed to love her, was one of her accusers. Her uncle had refused. I wish she would have said an uncle, just to make it a little bit more, you know what I mean? Like, what is that? Her uncle had refused to help her when she would have made him the king's hand. She would have made him the king's hand. Anyway.
Who wants that job?
Right now? I don't know. It's a weird time because, like I said, all this, like, King's Landing is a magnet for people trying to claim power right now. You know, Illyrio's got his sights set hard. I want to go back to my question though. Whose POV chapters are even like this? Who in our story buys into the structure, the power structure, and the, I don't know, like the ability to use, like, what the Faith is
doing.
Who
else is playing the Game of Thrones?
I think everyone in their own way is trying to make their situation the best possible.
Of course.
But maybe not Arya, specifically. She's really, really fed up with all of it. And for good reason, she's seen a lot of messed up stuff. And she's really bright and is able to see all the inconsistencies that people say and then what they do and what they believe and how they act. And John's the same, and I could go through a list. I think pretty much everyone that we see the story through, maybe except the Greyjoys, but they're crazy in their own way, are kind of, it's like they think people like this are so lame that they distance themselves from it entirely, and they don't even try to play this game. So I'm just like, I'm wondering who else is like this. It makes me uncomfortable to read it. I don't like it. I want to say it makes me mad, but I'm more so just mad at the High Sparrow. Mm-hmm. I'm so annoyed that these people would be so cowardly and live like this and talk like this and demand stuff from each other and hit each other, hurt each other, and torture each other, not allow people to sleep and mess up their lives, basically, for nothing. Just because we can.
It's not for nothing or just because we can. I mean, if you look from their perspective, it's like to cleanse the earth of sin.
But they don't really believe it. They don't believe it. They don't, though. It doesn't seem like they believe it at all to me.
I don't know. I mean, who am I to say that? But just because they're not necessarily aligned with something that's happening in King's Landing mm-hmm. doesn't mean it's like off or not, or like there's not some sort of like ulterior motivation or like higher power that they're answering to. You know what I mean? Like some true buy-in to some higher power. Like, so for them, they're just like carrying out their Lord's work, basically, you know? And so like cleansing the earth is their goal of sin. And somebody like Cersei Lannister has committed sin and they want to cleanse. Yeah, I mean, sure.
There's so much more to it though.
Sure, for sure. But I'm just saying, like, I don't think that it's interesting to me because I hate, like, I'm not trying to say Cersei necessarily deserves to, like, not be able to sleep for months on end, but, like, look at all the terrible stuff that she's done with her time and with her energy and yeah. with her life and yeah. even the way she talks and thinks about her children. I love how, like, Kevin, like, doesn't even want to hug her. He, like, sure. basically, he, like, tolerates it for a few yeah. seconds. Like, she's not a saint and she's not a good person.
She doesn't care.
And she doesn't so, care at all. You know.
She's not warm at all. She's
no,
a cold person.
And so... You know, I get it's like this question of, you know, who is the High Sparrow and all of his squad and like what's the point and what are they going to do? But to me, I mean, I have no idea what I was trying to say. You see me lose my train of thought in the middle of that.
Maybe you don't believe in what you're saying. Maybe that's what it is. I mean, don't you think that there's to me. He really doesn't buy in to any of this stuff.
Then what's the point of what he's doing?
I think that he's a vagrant, and he's been a vagrant, and he's a really smart person, and he's not bought into things, and now he's buying into things. But he's, like, doing it in almost rebellion to his whole life. He's like, oh, here it is, by the way. Here's some order that I found. I think maybe he really used – maybe – The seven gods brought him peace in his life at one point, but I think that he's old enough and smart enough to know that what he's doing is not in the best interest of those seven gods. I think maybe he's convincing himself like Cersei is.
I don't know. I disagree with you.
Okay. So you think the High Sparrow is a pious and true priest?
To what he believes.
Okay.
Sure. And I think it comes down to like, if you think that what he believes is right or not.
So torturing people is okay.
I'm not trying to say that torturing people right. is okay.
Right. But to him.
Yeah.
He thinks it's okay because he wants to get sin out of the world.
Yeah. Because in his mind, and I mean, like, sort of rightfully so. Like, look at all the things that Cersei is being accused of.
Sure. But he's, you know, why not just say it straight up then? Like, why does he have to pretend and play the game? Is that just part of it?
Because I think he truly believe, like, I mean, we just see it differently. Like,
what about his reaction to the stuff that she, like, blames on Stannis? And she's like, oh, that's Stannis. He's saying that I had incestuous relations and had incestuous kids because he wants the throne for himself and he'll say anything. And the High Sparrow was like, well, yes, and he is perpetuating this doctrine of the red demon, and he shall be stopped. It was like they found a mutual enemy, so he decided not to dig into that any further.
Yeah, because Stannis has a different religion than him, so he's going to automatically dismiss, like, his judgment. Because, like, Stannis believes in a false god.
So you're saying that it's possible that the High Sparrow is not as subtle as it seems, and he's, like, actually... just yeah. like hates Stannis because he's against the faith, so he's just like I anything about him I don't support,
right?
Hmm.
I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think to me it's interesting if we have this power and this force that can't be swayed by any sort of political.
That is interesting. If that's how it
thing.
Is, that
if
would
that's
be
how
interesting.
It is. I mean,
I would be curious how Fagon would deal with that.
If Fagon deals with it,
right? If that happens,
yeah,
I'd be interested to know what it would be like if. Those forces ran into these people.
I mean, I truly think anybody against that.
Anybody,
because,
yeah.
Because it's, you know, what if he truly is somebody who can't buy?
Right.
You know?
Right. And, well, how would he react with someone like Jon Snow? If he's really that guy.
He'll probably kill him.
Who would probably kill who?
The High Sparrow would probably kill Jon.
Why?
I'm just kidding. You know, I don't know. But, you know, if the High Sparrow can be bought by somebody, then it's like, then he just becomes another player in the game. Other
I think
than
he
this, like,
is bought.
Other than, like, this immovable pillar that, like, has this completely alternate view on, like, what the end game is.
So he's So you're saying it's possible that he's on one hand faith-based and completely buying it, but also giving the Tyrells special treatment because he's afraid that they're going to kill him.
I don't think he's giving the Tyrells special treatment necessarily.
I think he is, though, if Marjorie's not in a cell like that. She's been accused of some pretty dastardly things, and I know some people came forward and said that it was all, but not, but still, like, wouldn't he be so obsessed with that fact?
We don't really know, like, what happened with Marjorie, though, necessarily. Like, we don't know.
Well, if he's not, if Marjorie's not in that cell, then I think that he's BS.
But is she free because she's gonna go to trial, you know, and Cersei leaves before going to trial,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So we don't truly know, yeah, like, if Marjorie has actually gotten off the hook.
This will be interesting to know. It'll be interesting to know whenever, yeah, it comes around, because I think Cersei is so deeply at her core shaken by this that she's willing to pretty much do anything to get her revenge.
1,000%.
So how do you think Cersei will get her revenge?
I don't know, but you look at, like, so this conversation she has with Kevin, and we alluded to the Marcella thing, and she learns that this whole, like, go around where Kevin's like, I got some bad news. And she's like, what is, you know, there's like 8 things that happen, like, before she actually gets the quote unquote bad news. It's really bad news, but, like, the way she takes it, you know,
Kevin.
She learns about how she's like, Marcella, we have grave news from Dorne. And she, the first thing she thinks is like, Tyrion's, like, this is a Tyrion problem. Tyrion messed up, like, blah, 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 blah. So when I think about, like, how one track minded she is against Tyrion, and we look at her, like, in her down, I mean, this is Cersei's downward spiral that we've been seeing. And so you look at, like, her one track mind with somebody like Tyrion, who is the root cause of every problem, and Marcella's in Dorne and gets her ear cut off by Darkstar, and that's Tyrion's fault, you know? So I feel like the same sort of single-mindedness on at the expense or cost of anything and everything else around her. And if we can take the show in any sort of context, at the expense of somebody like Tommen and the rest of her family, you know, to bring down, you know, to act revenge on these people or on the High Sparrow, on all the people you listed off at the beginning that have wronged her. I mean, she truly has no one except for...
maybe Jaime.
She doesn't
and
have
Qyburn.
Jaime. Yeah, and Qyburn. I mean, she doesn't really have Jaime.
She believes it pretty hard,
she
though.
She believes it.
Until Kevin tells her about...
Brienne.
Braventree, yeah.
I mean... she doesn't have Jaime, at least right now. We don't really know, like, where his allegiance will ultimately lie, but...
he didn't respond to the letter.
He didn't respond to the letter.
The letter sucked, though.
Well, she was like, well, he must
I
not...
I love you, I love
he
you,
He must
I love
not have
you.
Read it.
Her attempts to be warm just are... you know, I hate when I see that in real life, too. You hate to see it. It's, yeah, like, you're not a warm person.
Right.
You're trying to be nice, but it comes off like a psychopath.
Right.
God.
Well, she's like, you must not have read it. There's no way that he would respond to my beautiful letter without coming directly to my... I hope he doesn't go ahead of his armies. I hope that he,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, he'll recklessly jump into the city and tear me out
already,
of this.
And if he's here already, like, how will I know? Why is he not? Yeah. So it's, I'm really, really, really excited for, her Walk of Atonement is one of my all time favorite moments in A Song of Ice and Fire. Like, to me, that's like one of those, like, in the way it's written, it's just like a world stopping moment as you kind of watch her for the first time really, like, truly pay for everything she's done, you know? As a reader, that's like a little cathartic, because as much as, like, we kind of enjoy Cersei's spiraling and her wild and out 24/7, like, I, you know, she pays for a lot of the, like, problems that she's caused. And it's, like, you know, really beautifully written. So.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm really looking forward to it. But we get some, at the end of the chapter, we get, like, a cliffhanger, basically. So she hears about Marcella and that Eris Urquhart is gone.
So funny.
Rest in peace.
When Kevin's like, some guy named Gerald Dane did this. Yeah, she, and I'm like, what's his name? Yeah. You said his name was Gerald Dane?
What do they call him?
I think you mean Darkstar, baby.
Well, then he calls him that later or something.
He's like, yeah, I think people call him Darkstar. Yeah.
I don't know why we think that's so funny.
Because it's ridiculous. I love it. I think him and Axel Florent would get along really well.
So true. But she learns that Eris Urquhart is dead.
And Justin Massey. Like,
she's like, go to Lord Qyburn on my behalf. Bring him a white cloak and tell him the time has come. So what does that mean?
Well, we know what it means. It means that Gregor Clegane is coming back. And
Clegane Bowl is back on.
they're gonna name him a member of the Kingsguard. Why? I don't know. After his conversation with Cersei here, I don't know why he would pass that word along, but
yeah,
but he does.
That's such a good question.
Yeah,
he's like, oh,
yeah.
After this, he's like, that's. Yeah. I'm gonna listen to what she says.
She just got done telling him that she believes that Tyrion was in Dorne. Yeah. Telling people to hurt Myrcella for something. Like, yeah. What a waste of your time to just torture Cersei's daughter in a non-direct and indirect way. It's just such a strange... See, I want to get to what we were just talking about, but what is that all about? It's she... I think we got to separate ourselves a little bit from being really mad at Cersei and understand that she has severe mental problems.
I mean, well, A, she's been genuinely tortured.
There's that, yeah.
But B, she does. I mean, yes, this whole Tyrion's like...
He's dark and sneaky. He's always in the shadows. I know this was him.
Prophecy. It's a a self-fulfilling prophecy of... You know, this whole, like, Maggie the Frog thing that's been following her since day one.
It's weird, though. But that's just use your brain.
That's the interesting thing about it, though, is, like, she's her own downfall, and she's going to blame it on 10 million other things that are out of her control and not take responsibility. But at the end of the day, like, she's the one who truly brings about her own downfall. So...
She was doing the right thing, though. She was trying to play Tywin after Tywin left, and she didn't really have a lot of help. But, I mean, she could have had as much help as she wanted to, I guess.
Yeah, and she could, like, you know, be nice to her kids.
Yeah. What were we just talking about before that?
Clegane Bowl.
Yeah, so how do you think that Qyburn brought him back from the dead?
Oh, I just, like, don't want to know.
It's so strange.
You know?
It's so strange. So she tells Kevin, hey... Do this one thing left for me. I swear I'm not crazy.
He's like, okay. How does he get brought back in the show?
There's no scene that
we don't know.
There's no acknowledgement.
We just see him.
Qyburn's a mad scientist.
Yeah.
And
his little like basement lab.
Yeah. Beakers and schematics. And
we just see
him. He comes up with the answer.
Yeah.
So he brings back Robert Strong, right? Mm-hmm. How did the heck does he do that?
I mean, there's a lot of dark. We've seen a lot of dark magic and like
we've seen crazy stuff. We've seen really unfair stuff. We've seen beautiful stuff. We've seen poignant stuff wrapped up in like a muddy pathway with people that don't really like each other. We've seen like a whole broad range of expression through these people, mystery and beauty and bad stuff. But this guy, though, I mean, I'm just curious about this. It's like a monster movie kind of thing.
It is like a zombie kind of
But there's situation. No White Walkers. There's no, you know, there's no Melisandre birthing a shadow out of her body.
Well, who knows what Qyburn is like truly capable of?
Well, that's my question because he's there.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean,
is he a wizard? I feel like he's got to have some kind of tie to some, I want to say, Eastern religion.
Or, like, something greater to, like, give him this power or authority. Or maybe he's just, like...
Really good doctor?
Or, like, a mad scientist, like he said.
Sure, but, like, how? You know, is he using... Is he have a spike that has lightning? Strike it and it channels all this electricity down in the nervous system of this giant?
Like, he just, like, sewed it back together and, like, gave him a blood transfusion.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. That's what it seems like. And later on, we learn that his fellow Kingsguard guys are like, this guy doesn't eat.
Yeah.
He doesn't eat, sleep, piss, shit.
Well, you think about like,
how, never smelled fart ever. This is weird.
Like, how's John gonna come back to life, you know? And so, well, we just don't
know. Melisandre's there. And plus, he has a wolf that he wargs into.
Right, but so we don't know a lot about, we haven't seen it happen. Right. So we don't know a lot about, like, who have we seen come back to life other than, what's his name? Red God guy. I forget every person's name is. It's a fire every time we record this podcast. Whatever his name is.
Thoros. Like,
yes.
No, sorry, Beric.
One of those people that's Thoros, out there.
Thoros brings back Beric from the dead.
I got somebody on this podcast that knows about A Song of Ice and Fire. Anyway, that's the only like real example we have of somebody coming back to life. And that's done through some sort of like religious act. So, you know. And I guess we can then, well, we don't know what happens with John. It does Melisandre actually bring him back, or is he like warged into ghosts? And like, so is that going to be like a religious act? I don't know.
Only death can pay for life. Let's use that rule.
Okay.
So Qyburn's taking people from the street down to his little dungeon, or criminals, because they sometimes give him criminals. Let's say it took 100 lives to bring back Gregor Clegane because he was so dead, poisoned, beheaded, etc. How did the 100 lives get channeled into his body?
I don't know.
If you're going to write a book and you're going to bring a guy back who's 8 foot tall, all right, and he's going to be the main linchpin in the trial,
it's going to be.
I got to know how he did it.
It's going to be like making a Horcrux, like too dark to know.
But that makes sense. Making the Horcrux was revealed in the very beginning, you know, like what he was doing to Harry was him trying to make a Horcrux. When it backfired, the soul got attached to Harry because it was the nearest living thing, right? That was the goal. That was the purpose. That was him making a Horcrux. He's got a magic wand. There's magic happening. I'm pointing it at you. I'm saying magical words. Magic is happening.
That's not how...
But it is in that book. It is how magic happens in that book, okay?
No, it doesn't, though.
They're channeling nature through their wands because they have magical blood within them. So let's say Qyburn's a magician.
I don't know how he breaks.
Well, you don't have to know. I'm just speculating. You don't have to be George R. R. Martin in this. I don't even know if George knows yet. But I'm just curious because he's still there at King's Landing, you know? He's still there by the end of it with the knives.
Right.
And it's so cool. Like, honestly, it's creepy.
It is
Qyburn,
very creepy.
Late in this book is creepy.
And especially when you think about like the fact that he and Cersei are... They've obviously had a lot of time off page to like, if they're this close, you know, so it's
also
like,
she's crazy.
What is this like?
So I don't really know if they're actually that close.
I think they are like conspiring.
Okay. Okay. They're conspiring.
Whisperings.
Okay.
Ranting and ravings.
Sure.
Spiralings. I don't know.
So how is he gonna, where does he go? I think he's going to be big bad boy.
I thought you were going to ask, how does he bring back?
Again?
No.
I think he might be big bad boy. I think he might be like, Euron's little friend.
Oh, interesting.
Why not? He can bring back the mountain who was beheaded and poisoned.
I mean, he's got some sort of like real, genuine power. What happens to him in the show? He's like, all that.
Remember at the Clegane Bowl, he's like walks past. He's like, oh, no. I think he dies then. It's like a master student thing.
Yeah.
And then Cersei's like, ooh. <runs by. laughs>
I forgot about that.
So master student thing. So that could be his fate.
Yeah, I mean,
this monster thing seems so random. It seems too random. And I honestly have not had enough conversations like this about it. So I do not want to pass this up because I don't know what's going to happen with Qyburn and I haven't heard anyone talk about it. None of my friends talk to me about Qyburn. Why don't more people talk to me about Qyburn?
Send out a mass text.
Yeah. Why haven't we talked about the fact that, I mean, Qyburn uses, in the show, he's got this syringe and he's got an organic test tube, or not test tube, like an organic, what is it called? The little fluid goes through, a little tube?
Yeah.
Like a hose made out of like flesh from like an animal, probably some kind of like weird intestine. And he's, I'm taking poison out of here and putting it into here. And I'm using some, you know, stem cells and...
Why was he... Like, why was his chains, maester chains, taken away again?
It's sort of mysterious, but he was doing things that were not approved by other maesters.
He was doing some sort of beginning of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. But we don't know exactly what he was doing, right? We just know that he was doing things that were, like, off book.
Sure.
Like, that weren't normal.
Very off book.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were blue. They were blue in nature.
I mean, so I guess you can maybe potentially, well, I don't know. I was going to say you can argue, like, somebody who is a maester has quote-unquote power in their own right because they've, you know,
knowledge,
gone to special school. Like, knowledge is power, yeah.
Sure.
But, you know, there might be other, some, like, deeper, probably likely something, like, deeper at work with somebody like Qyburn. But
I didn't see anything come out of Maester Loen, though. And, you know, he was, like, in a position, if he had some kind of power to reveal, to do something, he could have done something.
That's a good point.
With Theon and all that.
That's a good point.
Even, like, power of reasoning. But I guess there was no reasoning at that point. There was nothing. But Qyburn, in that case, I think could have maybe social engineered it a little differently. But I'm hung up on this potential wizardry or untold. Potential for Qyburn to serve even scarier masters.
I just Googled Qyburn theories.
Okay, now we're talking. Now we're talking. Make sure they're not show theories, though.
Yeah, I know. That's hard to that's hard to search for when I just type in those two words. But I'm not reading any of these. This is not helpful. this is not helpful in this exact moment. So
we're going to have to come back to this. But if you guys have anyone has any Qyburn theories, please let us know. Yeah. I want to, I'm curious about that. With a Q. About Qyburn. It's weird.
It is weird. It is weird. And like I said, him being the only guy in Cersei's ear, truly. Like,
the next Cersei chapter.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
In your brain, folks, it might be that it's just an invention of the show.
Yeah.
That Gregor Clegane picks up and carries Cersei away, but that is a Georgeism. That is in the next chapter. This guy that is a brought back to life character in this book. There's five books right now, and they all check out. There's not silly stuff that has the telltale signs of bad writing and like a not very well fleshed out imagination. Like, we're confident in George's skills to tell us a story that we buy. So I'm really curious as to what he's going to do to justify bringing back the mountain
Clegane
from death.
Clegane. That's the only justification we need.
So that's like a, look at this instead of, don't look at this. Yeah. Look at this. Don't ask me questions.
It doesn't matter why he is brought back. The only thing that matters is that he back.
Oh, wow. It's a dangerous world out here. Dangerous.
I'm trying to think if there's any other questions. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that we just don't know about what's going to happen with what the Tyrells' next big moves really are going to be, and how Cersei really like handles something like Jaime not being on her side, and what's really up with Qyburn and all this kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of intrigue happening at King's Landing, and I feel like it's easy to write off kind of what's happening at King's Landing because we look at the stuff that's happening beyond the wall, or we look at the stuff that's happening with any other character that seems to be like a little bit more, I guess, like intriguing or like have broader implications. Cause it's like, at the end of the day, is this really the Song of Ice and Fire about, and the clash between the
sparrows?
Yeah. Like that to me, that like the fight for the actual Iron Throne. It's like when if you've really been paying attention to Game of Thrones, then you know it's not really about the Game of Thrones, like, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it could be like easy to like dismiss what's happening in King's Landing by, oh, we're all going to get blown up anyway or something. But I mean, there's a lot of intrigue here and there's a lot of moving parts.
Do you think Cersei's going to blow up the Sept?
I think that there will be an abundance of wildfire used at some point by someone. Like, I think the idea of like King's Landing just getting burnt to a crisp, whether it's like on purpose by Cersei or potentially like on accident or something, you know what I mean? Like, I think absolutely.
So the wildfire is going to come back.
For sure. I would think, I mean, I think so.
Remember in this chapter when she was like, oh, I know why he wanted her ear cut off? Because he had his nose cut off during Blackwater.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
That scene, though, yikes. That scene in the show with the wildfire and Tommen, like that whole,
oh yeah,
that whole sequence is one of my favorite scenes in the show. Yeah. Of just like the music and the, it's such a good,
that kept us all hanging on. It's after
that was like
season five.
Yeah, really.
We're like, oh my god, it's so good.
That was, I mean, that was really good though.
For so. Sure, it was excellent.
Yeah,
really excellent. Maybe it might go down like that again. If it does go down like that again, then Cersei will have gotten her revenge. But I don't know. I think that she's going to be doing it wrong if she does it that way. I think that it should be really slow, like what she did to the Septa in the TV show. Mm-hmm, that's how mm-hmm, it should be for mm-hmm, the High Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's the worst one.
Interesting.
Yeah. Although I'm not sure how it's going to shake out for him with everyone else. And it's the same for Qyburn. This chapter has left me with nothing but questions. And I'm thinking about everybody else that's going to fill this power vacuum.
There's a lot of opportunity.
Such a weird situation for them to be in. Kevin's like, I don't know where the Stannis got the money for those troops. And it's like, well, did Cersei ever talk to the Iron Bank when they were trying to talk to her? We're confused, or we're not confused, we're distracted by all of these things happening in the city. And what people that we are calling our friends might do. So confusing. It's like, aren't they the people that you just made your allies? The Tyrells?
That's politics, baby.
It's, like I was saying earlier, not how most of the people that we travel with in this world live. And I think that that's good.
Well, it just like makes me think about, it's just, it's like Cersei is just so bad at all of this.
Yeah, but she's kind of good too.
I think she's okay, but like she just like prides herself so much being her father's daughter when Tywin would have, you know, sat down with the Iron Bank.
You think he would have?
I mean, I don't know. I think he was a little bit more savvy than she was. He's got less of like, she has like such a chip on her shoulder.
She does. How much do you think that has to do with her actual ineffectiveness, the fact that she's a woman and the sort of inherent misogyny in their system?
I mean, she's absolutely going to be at a disadvantage because of that. I'm not going to dismiss that at all because I think that that's true. But I think that the interesting thing about her character is that she blames so much of her problems on things like that when she, at the end of the day, it's her personality.
Right,
that's
the problem.
Don't
you love when people do that?
You know, and so it's like, absolutely, that's an issue that we see happening in A Song of Ice and Fire, but like, she's the problem.
Oh, yeah. You look at Lady Olenna, who's doing basically the same thing that Cersei's doing, but she's doing it behind Mace.
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
Separating herself from the fire, right. Essentially.
Right.
Which is wise. She's a really smart character.
Olenna?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her and Tywin made a pretty good match, pretty good friends.
That's exciting. Yeah. I'm really excited for the next Cersei chapter. I know I've said that 50 times in this one, but, and this chapter is really good too, but you know, I'm just excited.
I really liked George's use of the space that she was in mm-hmm. and all the stuff that she was going through to scream all of the truths of her situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what you're supposed to do. It's not only tell us a story, but if you can, use every word to back up your whole point. And I really think that he did that in a big way with what she's dealing with in the room and how they treated her. And it was really, really annoying what she was dealing with, like on several levels. There's deep levels of annoying, and then there's just how they treat her levels of annoying and the certain kind of personalities that they had levels of annoying. And for Cersei particularly, that kind of stuff would really, really eat at her. So he knows, obviously, he knows her really well. And, crafted this perfect little scenario. It seems
it's like
these,
perfect little hell.
Exactly. It seems like these situations are real, but really all they are is a storyteller going, this is happening. Like, I want to create this feeling inside of this place. So before this chapter happened, none of this stuff, this place, this area really existed. The Kevin coming to see Cersei, all of that was, you know, it came up because it was the only thing that could happen. He like set up all the dominoes and then knocked them down. And then as he knocked them down, the way that they fell, like yelled back at us, mm-hmm. Cersei sucks. What she's dealing with is really bad. And even though she's doesn't deserve retribution because it's not like she's been innocent, because all of these people are buying into this weird game that they're at risk still from her, still, if she's smart enough to get herself out of there and she has enough friends to get herself out of there.
Which she clearly does.
She does. Well, she does though.
Friends?
No, no, no. Not necessarily because they like her, but she's laid the groundwork with people like Qyburn.
There's what? That's one.
When she comes out, she's going to have the mountain literally carry her.
Okay.
And there's Tommen, who's her kid, who's the king.
Yeah, but who's in Margaery's pocket?
Yeah, not as much as he's in Cersei's.
So I'll
though,
give it 2.5.
Okay.
Peeps.
I mean, but they're really powerful. One's going to be fighting for her in a trial. One can bring people back from the dead, and one is king.
A kid king, but yes.
Sure. Yeah. But her uncle's the Lord Regent for now, too.
Yeah.
And for what it's worth, like I said, the Tyrells need Tommen to remain king for Cersei to be queen, or for, not Cersei, for Margaery to be queen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. Like, are they just trying to get out?
If I were them, I was wanting to talk about that earlier. If I were them, I would try to get out because of all the stuff that's happening.
Yeah, so it's like maybe her being queen, like, isn't their top priority necessarily at this moment. Like, they're just...
I don't know what they want. If they retreated or if they became less involved with politics, someone's going to come for them and ask for fealty either way. So they're kind of in a tough position because they need to either be offensive or defensive, and they have to make up their mind basically right now. And that's one of the reasons why the situation with Loras is so important to know about, because he's not only a powerful player in their corner potentially and also figuratively, but of the potential way that they're going to react to it and how that personal reaction might affect their ability to play the game. A lot of shit going on.
There is.
Owns of the chapter.
I was thinking, before we go into the owns of the chapter, I have one comment that needs no comment. But when you were talking about, this is a meta question. When you were talking about like how George R. R. Martin wrote that space that didn't exist before, I was just like thinking about his writing style, period. And you know how like some authors talk about how characters and like plot lines and stuff kind of write themselves.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder how often that happens with him, you know?
It's probably every time.
It's so interesting.
Yeah. It's like he knows. It's kind of like making a podcast almost.
Uh-huh.
We have a feeling about how we feel, but the act of doing it itself is what literally lays the groundwork. So, for example, if you're a rapper, yeah, here's what I do when I go to the studio, right?
When you start,
right?
Yeah,
I put on a beat, I put on my headphones, and I use the same mic I'm making this podcast with. And what I do is I listen to it, right? And I'm like, and then just start going. And then like sometimes it's words, and sometimes it's just a feeling, sometimes it's just a sound, but the attitude and the energy is there. And I feel like that's what he's doing. He's like, and he's like, but what happens here?
Computer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's just interesting. Okay, now we can go to own.
But he knows the truth about it. He knows the truth about all of his characters. He knows about Cersei. He knows about Qyburn. He knows about the High Sparrow. And that's why it's so satisfying, because it's so slow. It's so, like, she can't skip. And that's something that a certain kind of person will do to you. They know that you have to slow down. And if you start skipping stuff and like, oh, just cut to the point. I'm trying to change my light bulb, my headlight in my car. Just started at 3 minutes. Like, let's do that part. And he's like pointing the camera in a weird way.
Right.
It's hard not to meander, especially when it's something like this that's captured live. But when you're an author and you're able to re-edit yourself over and over, I feel like he's sort of able to wrangle his meandering in.
That's why I like something like that Loras comment is like, well, we have
so
to pay
important.
To, we have to pay
exactly.
To that, yeah.
Exactly. I like books. Okay. You want to do yours?
Yeah, I'm ready for my own. My own is just like a little moment. There's so many things, but we didn't talk about this. So that's usually what I try to make my own. Cersei's getting some information from the Septas, and they're kind of like on the way to talk to the High Sparrow. And she's getting some information about like what's going on. It says, "His Grace is in good health," said Septa Scalera, "and well protected day and night. The Queen's with him always." I am the Queen. She swallowed. Smiled and said, "That's good to know. Yeah. Tommen loves her so. I never believed those terrible things that were being said of her," which then, you know, whatever stuff happens after that.
When the High Sparrow talks to her
about it. But I just liked that moment of like, she's trying. She's genuinely trying right now. She like literally bites her tongue and doesn't kind of bite back with her classic, "I am the Queen." So I liked that moment.
My own Loudly, she asked the gods to defend her and her innocence. Silently, she prayed for her accusers to suffer sudden, painful deaths. I mean, people like the High Sparrow, or at least, I can't speak for his whole existence, but the way that he's being in this case, by making her say certain things and not allowing her to skip to the point, it has to, and Cersei has internalized as well. She knows she has to do the act, go through the whole process. And that's what she's doing in Your Own. And that's what she's realizing that she has to do in Mine. Mm-hmm. And like, it's like a philosophical, poignant, two part sentence that is expressing the truth for the life for people like her. It's, she's not living her truth. And so there's two lives that she has to play. The one that's out loud and the one that is like, it just painstakingly annoying to her because it's like, I have to do this and say this and pretend and smile.
Right.
And I get ahead a little bit and I get a little bit of what I want. And then there's the life inside of her that's, I fuck Jamie. She's so blunt. Also, like when they were going up or down the spiral staircase, I forget, she was daydreaming about pushing Septa and Nella
down the stairs. I love her inner monologue.
Oh, I do too.
I mean, she's so, like you said, she's ruthless.
Ruthless in her observations as well. Yeah. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, she holy is. Crap. We've got quite some time before we get back to her though. So
really?
Yeah, we've got, are we wrapping up? If you want to check along with our reading order, you can find that at afeastwithdragons.com. I mean, we're basically just, we've got one chapter left in Feast for Crows, but we're deep in dance at this point. Next week, very exciting, The Griffin Reborn.
Oh, cool.
So if you want to follow along, you can find that at afeastwithdragons.com.
You can send us an own to one of our social media accounts or to our email account. Our email is contact@gameofowns.com. We're Game of Owns on social media. We have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. I'm doing a solo reread and solo podcast.
It's very good. Even I listen to it.
Of a song of ice and fire.
It's very good. You should check that out.
If you like the podcast, go to your podcast app or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if there's an ability to rank us on something, give us the highest rank possible.
Leave us a little review.
That would be really nice.
Other people can find it.
Yeah, they could find it. Do you have a reason for wanting other people to find it?
Well, I mean, we're just like having a nice time. And so I think it's cool if other people want to talk about A Song of Ice and Fire with us. That's all.
Yeah. And what are you up to these days? Just living that quarantine life?
Working from home.
Yeah.
24/7.
It's still going, you know.
I know. It's so wild to think about. We made that episode of the Shea a lifetime ago, mm-hmm. It feels like. I mean, I know it was only like a handful of episodes back from this perspective, but I was a different person back then.
Sure, yeah. We hope that you're all doing good. And
staying safe. And
yeah, don't go out in the radiation. That's not what it is. It sort of seems that way. It's like, hazmat-y, but
we've seen people with hazmat.
It's true. But nothing, you know what I mean? There's nothing obvious to walk into. There's no dangerous cloud of smoke or anything. It's silent, deadly predator. It's not like grayscale.
I don't know. Which one would you rather have? Let's play that game.
COVID or grayscale?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know. If you can stop the grayscale, that might be something. Then you can like intimidate people. You're like, don't make me touch you. But if you had COVID, you could do the same thing.
You could.
To people, be like,
people do that.
Dude, I don't even want to know about
that. We can't get into this. It's messed up.
I don't even want to know about those people.
Yeah, so check out afeastofdragons.com and we're going to keep the
rolling. Thanks for listening, though. We appreciate it. We're going to, you know, talk about the winds of winter when it happens. That's just like my North Star right now is the Winds of Winter.
We've been talking a lot about the Winds of Winter behind the scenes, BTS.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exciting.
Thanks for listening, and hope you catch us on the next one.
Bye.
Do you understand this?
I do. Diet cream soda. Going in. It's good.
Mmm. You know, Dr. Pepper is already good. Dr. Pepper already kind of feels like a treat,
mm-hmm.
partially because they color it so red, mm-hmm. so it looks a little bit different than a soda. Diet Dr. Pepper kind of, it's always felt a little creamy to me.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
This.
Plus the cream soda piece.
Why do you think they waited so long?
I don't know.
I feel like they always just try to hold out good stuff.
Until later. Here's the thing about that, though, is because Diet Dr. Pepper already tastes kind of creamy, it's such a dominant flavor in that. When you drink the full flavor, regular Dr. Pepper plus cream soda, it's more of a balance. This one is like full on cream. We should test this next to cream soda.
And also to the non-diet one, probably.
Yeah,